Hi, everyone, and welcome to Drukama Radio. I'm your co-host today, Kepfer Haru. We are very grateful to have Daishi with us again today. Daishi, may I ask how you are?
I'm doing wonderful. It's good to hear your voice. I'm happy to be here with you. And let's get into this very interesting conversation that's so important to so many people.
Absolutely. Today, we're discussing something very interesting and something that kind of impacts all of our lives on a moment-to-moment and day-by-day basis. And I don't think we look at it enough, you know, or certainly there's an opportunity to be more aware of how our personalities function. We're looking at the personality and kind of what it is today and how it can control us unconsciously. We believe our personalities are us. But we may or may not recognize that they're constructed and influenced by everything we see in society. So, Daishi, I was wondering if you happen to be able to lend some insight on that relationship between who we believe we are and the society that kind of tries to tell us who we are.
Great introduction. So it's a good starting point. Who we are, who society tells us we're supposed to be. Those are greatly opposed principles in truth. So if you look at a baby when it's born, it has nothing to do with any of the nonsense that we're imparted with as we grow up. It doesn't understand things like jealousy and hate and geometry and Ferraris and all kinds of emotional and mental and energetic problems. And it doesn't really associate negativity and positivity the way we do. It doesn't have any of the impact and influence that's going to be bombarded on it every single moment of its life, from actually in the womb all the way out through conception and on. So that poor little child, you could say, is completely programmed by everything that it perceives through its five senses. And then whether or not those receptive five senses are then enforced positively or negatively again and again, it starts to generate its own kinds of confirmation bias and its own kinds of identity and personality and egoship. And all of these things begin to form more and more as it gets older. And really, that entire egg of self is its trappings at that point from being able to be free and momentarily awake and with pure clarity from then forward.
And, you know, it's always kind of a, I don't want to say dirty word, but like the focus that we're trying to rid ourselves of in self-improvement, self-evolution is that sort of trapping of ego. But, you know, what we're witnessing from the moment we're born to our entire lives is a process, you know, of development and developing this thing that we call our ego and personality. Is it necessarily a negative thing, or is it just a negative relationship that we've built with it and allowing it to kind of determine who we feel we operate as?
Again, it's an excellent question that we really got to think about, because in the case of the chrysalis and the butterfly and the caterpillar, the shell or the ego is vital for its growth. It can't grow without it. So in that case, the ego is paramount. It's just so important. It can't be overstated enough. I mean, there's no way to look at the ego as anything other than absolutely inherently vital to our growth. But at the same time, that inherent covering, that egoness, can be used in a way to manipulate. You know, if we're not aware of that chrysalis, if we're not aware of that covering, of that ego attachment relationship at all, then it can be a source of control. And that's something that we see happening again and again today in our world that people don't really understand well enough. If they understood they're being controlled in that way, then they can finally break into freedom. Looking for control in any other direction is going to cause even more of an attachment to personality and thus more control. Does that make sense?
It definitely resonates with me, Daishi. It sounds like what you're saying is that the more I use my personality and ego to try and control others and the environment outside of me, the more I'm going to be fulfilling my ego expectations, and that's going to always fall apart because clearly I can't always control, govern, or dictate those things outside of me. But if I allow those to control me within, if I'm influenced by others in a way that's going against what I feel is right, you know, I'm in that same game. Whereas if I focus more on what's happening within, how I feel within, what I focus on in terms of my thoughts within and everything with my personality, that's almost a light onto my personality or my ego, and there's some awareness and freedom and space there. Does that sound similar to that expression that you just shared with us, Daishi?
It's perfect. It's just that I hate to say it, but the story's worse than that. It gets darker, gets more horrific. So let me explain why. It's not just that we're feeding that, like you eloquently said, the truth there, that we're feeding this awareness into the identity and attachments are becoming more and more locked and bonded. The problem is that if I'm unaware of it, the whole of society that does recognize that personality attachment in certain segments in our reality, certain places either consciously or unconsciously in our reality, and I'll explain more on that in a minute, but once it's recognized outside of me, but not within me, in other words, I don't recognize this empowerment of self, but everybody else or someone else does, it can be used in a way to control me almost to a T. And so let me explain a little bit about what I mean there. For example, the most important material on earth right now is data. The gold of yesteryear is today called data. And you can see these Silicon Valley tech giants spending billions and even trillions of dollars along with the governments to procure data about how our personalities function on an individual and communal level. This is the goal and the gold of all of these control groups. Why? Because if they understand your specific personality attachments and your group personality attachments, they can message to you either through pain or pleasure, aversion or attraction, and make you move or act in any way that they want. Period. And this isn't just me talking about something I'm thinking that might be true. This is quite apparent and obvious to anyone who's ever looked into the subject of data procurement. So the drive today is to understand how the personality functions, because they've given up, not everybody, but most have given up on the awareness portion, the consciousness portion. That's sort of too big and too wild. They're not really sure about how that can be mapped or functioned. It seems to be outside the scope of instruments. But the personality, that unconscious habitual tendency that drives us from aversion to attraction, that can be metered, that can be measured, that can be utilized for control in every case. So if I want you to vote a certain way, I just need a little bit of data, a little tiny bit of data on how you're acting on your Facebook page or your Twitter page or your whatever social media interactions. And I gather that data, and then I can build algorithms around how you function almost to a T and how to drive you, therefore, almost to a T. And if I have that information, then I can decide, okay, I know this group and I know this individual, and I can steer them this way or that way by generating a narrative that I know will touch the key points of their personality and their unconscious attachments toward it. And I can make them believe or do or run from or be in fear of anything at all. And so this is the nature of how the drive of technology has gone through the history of time, because originally it was about how to understand the mind so we can manipulate the mind. And with the drive toward technology and data procurement, it's been more and more about how can we predictively understand each and every person and each person as a group or whole, or divided into semi-group, subgroup, subdivisions. And if I have this mountain of data, then I press left, I press right, I press up, I press down, and they sort of hop and skip and jump without me even asking. I can simply just do these things and lead them down this direction, and they're going to say yes, and they're going to drive toward it. And we have this in our news media, we have it in our government, we have it in our schools, we have it in everything we use every day, in our phones and tablets and computers and laptops. And it's constantly gathering data so that the system itself can determine how can we make them say yes or no. Now, here's the interesting thing. We have to say yes or no. That's kind of part of this deal. We have to agree to something, because if we don't agree, there's power in mass. So if the entire human condition says, no, this is not right and we don't agree with it, it doesn't matter who you are, you're not going to change that tide. It's too large. But if I can manipulate you to think that what I'm asking you to do is good, or what I'm asking you to vote for or be about or to represent as a good thing, then you'll come to me and say, we need more of this. Oh, certainly. Absolutely, of course, I'll provide that. So this is the great manipulation of our society, and that manipulation is growing day by day, exponentially. And this is all tied to one thing, not how we picket, not how we have Antifa groups running around hitting each other with sticks or signs saying peace and love, not how we have far left, far right, centerist left, how we have people fighting for teachers, not for teachers, for guns, not for guns. None of these things are the point. It's not going to make any difference in that regard because we've been doing that for generations and generations and generations, and it's never done anything to change anything. We still have the issue of more and more and more mass manipulation and control. We can see that. The only way this gets solved is by taking away the trigger points inside that are our unconscious attachments to the thing they use to manipulate. Does that make sense?
Absolutely clear. You know, it's funny you mention all these little control measures with big data functioning. You know, I was actually an independent contractor for a big data group for a time. And what they do, they had an algorithm where they listened, soft listened through things like Alexa and other sorts of recording devices, and they looked for a list of keywords that you would say. So it already leans into what you believe is right, what you feel like you're doing, you know, your day-to-day lifestyle, and it will find the targeted ads that correspond. So they're providing, it's almost the feedback. So you've unconsciously programmed it to return back to you the thing you believe, think, feel is right. And at the end of the day, just as you said, the same thing holds true. We're duped, but we are really the ones in the pilot seat. And we're the ones that are feeding the system that's then coming back, that system of control, telling us the things that we're already bought into and presenting it in a way that it's kind of just a clear reflection of what we're asking that system to then put over us, since we're not able to see that process happening within ourselves. So I just wanted to share that little experience I had seeing the other side of that and seeing how that system's functioning and kind of just regurgitating back our unconscious in a very, you know, to some people, invasive way, because it's always listening. It's always ready to find and interpret those things you're asking for that you don't realize necessarily that you're looking for.
And I'll add again to the horror story just a little bit here. You say it in such a nice way. You have experience there, and I love it, because it sounds as if they're providing us exactly what we really want, and that they're just, you know, trying to go underneath the core of our unconscious to find those things and provide them in a sort of innocent way. But let's go one step further. And of course, I know you don't mean it that way. I'm just being facetious, but let's go one step further. The next side of this is not so much as telling the consumer, we're going to dig through you to figure out what you really want in order to make you happy. So we're doing it covertly behind your back because it's the best thing for you. That would sort of be a good intention, and I understand in some ways how that could be seen as a positive and still invasive and sort of weird, but nevertheless, that would be something you could at least write off as, well, they meant well. Let's go one step further, though, in the way that it's being used today and more so tomorrow. Instead of looking at what it is you might want unconsciously, and maybe you're not able to find or get. So, you know, I know you need that fly swatter. I heard you say flies. I heard you say you got stung or whatever it is, or bitten. And so we're just going to put a fly swatter up for you because it's what you want. We found the best deal. Here it is. And congratulations. We're really happy to have helped you. The other side of this coin, which is mirrored to the side we just flipped, but is darker, is that this next step is not to find what it is you think you want, you're not sure about, but to decide for you by implanting unconsciously the things that you necessarily don't need, but now believe that you do. And the problem with this and the ramifications of this is that it goes out into tentacles of eventual abuse that can go into very dark places. So in other words, you didn't know that you needed a new computer until I understood your personality attachments and started to create certain kinds of fear representation about your current computer that slowly drove you to me now placing a new computer in front of your face in form of an advertisement and you saying, oh, you know, I think I should replace my old computer, right? So there's a very subtle manipulation, and that's something that's happening right now. Bigger than that is for us to see systems that manipulate the way we feel about, you know, our values and our families and the freedoms that we have. And so if they have the ability to manipulate the way that we feel, again, because of personality attachments, to certain main kinds of moralistic ideas that tie our fabric of the community together, then we lead down a road that can be really dark, because then we can decide that, you know what, freedom isn't all that important, right? And that we could say, you don't really believe freedom leads to goodness. You think freedom leads to badness or chaos or problems in the society and with each other. And therefore, freedom should slowly be taken away, right? And of course, the answer is, yeah, I now believe that, if I've been programmed enough to think that that was the way things should be. And if somebody understands my unconscious attachment to the egoic identity well enough, they can very easily manipulate me in that unconscious sleepy state to start believing some really insane things, and not only believing them, but actually acting on them and pushing them forward. And so big data, this huge data procurement movement, which is going on at government level, military level, it's going on at the tech giant level, it is everything every large country is involved with today, is simply just a tool by which the masses can be coerced into believing or thinking anything and being okay with it. And this is the direction. Make no mistake. So we know in advertising over the last 100 years or more that the way unconscious images and symbols are placed in an ad directly affects the way we feel about that particular product or message. There is a whole science, obviously, behind that. There's a very deep science behind that. And so that manipulation has been going on for a long time. The deeper manipulation is, how do we use these logos and symbols and archetypal images and ideas and constructs to more quickly and quality and quantity affect the person so that they simply just obey the things we want them to do, and they have no idea. In fact, it's not even that they don't have an idea. It's that they're completely behind us, that they actually believe being enslaved to a system X or Y is the best thing for them. And we walk into the cell absolutely happy, and they slam the door and lock it, and we say, this is the best thing. You're right. And we've been manipulated the whole time. Nothing is going to fix this problem unless we face our inherent unconscious relationship with the very identity they use to manipulate each and every one of us. And I hate to sound so dark in this particular podcast, but I have a concern, and that concern is that people are free, really free, free thinking, free to comprehend, free to make their own choices, and free to decide through a clear, conscious, critical mind. And yes, it's true, we need to get rid of biases in our connections first before that clear mind comes up. But once we get that clear mind, we're now not defending and investing in that illusory identity any longer. And because of that, I don't have any fear. I don't have any need to defend anything. So if somebody comes to me and says, that particular idea is terrible, you say, yep, it might very well be. Thank you for pointing it out. What's your point? Let me see it. And I can actually have a decent conversation with somebody. If you look around our country and most of the countries in the world today, there is no conversation. It's either you're here or you're not. It was the old statement, you're either with us or you're against us. I hated that idea. There's no such thing as with us or against us. There's just different ways to look at the same thing. And unless as a society we become open, truly open, to listening to others and saying, hey, can we have a conversation about this? Can we talk about this? And I promise not to get tied up in my own egoism. If you also promise not to get tied up in your own egoism, then we can really be a good constructive team and actually look at ideas and concepts together, which we should be doing anyway, and build something really great. If we don't approach our world, our communities, if our government isn't in that kind of paradigm, we're going to continue with wars, human trafficking, illegal criminal activity all the way through from the closest neighbor all the way through the deepest parts of the government, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's corrupted through and through and through. So we cannot do the same thing over and over and over again, expecting a different result. We can't think that we're going to go out into the world and picket, scream, and shout from the same unconscious attachments to egoic personality and make any real changes until we've made changes first within. So changes within make changes without, and changes within allow the outside not to manipulate and control the way I think, feel, and act. That is vital right now because we're moving into an age very, very quickly where that's on the top of the priority list for every big government and tech business.
There's something incredibly empowering in that. And it always feels like any system, any person, any influence that wants to dig in is going to use our unconscious fear of things we haven't yet reconciled within ourselves to manipulate and control us. So without fear as a leveraging point, you know, there can only be a freedom, an acceptance, a non-judgmental framework that is simply open and allowing, and you can't really find contention and involuntary movement there. And if we're all just free and open and honest to hear different opinions, different energies, different thoughts, different patterns, you know, whether they're personally in alignment with us or not, that freedom and openness of sharing definitely harkens back to a day when we were able to really share ideas and not be so twisted up in our kind of unconscious patterns and willing to defend something that maybe we haven't even really investigated. Why do I really uphold these values? What real truth of them is in there for me that's not allowing others? And the coming storm is really looming because, as you said, there's a lot of interest in positions of power for being able to really more easily and effortlessly exert their control. It's a typical feeling. We can even see it in relationships or between people of, oh, you're doing something that I don't personally like. Therefore, as your friend or as your buddy or as whoever, I want to make sure you're not doing the wrong thing for me. So I want to manipulate and control that situation just so that we're both on the same level. We're both happy, really not realizing that you're snuffing out the other person's happiness and really trying to make that other person your slave. So we've got to definitely look to ourselves and look to that truth that's within us to bring us out of this stupor so that we're not constantly duping ourselves at the expense of ourselves, our livelihood, our society, our environment, nature, this planet, everything. So let that be a wake-up call. Daishi, I was just wondering if you had any closing words for us, and we'll go ahead and call it a show because this is definitely giving me a lot to sit with.
Very well said. And if we took it to a level of personal relationships, it's the same thing in terms of a personal relationship as it is all the way with governmental relationships. And the way government appeals and works for, quote unquote, its people, and the way that they work for, quote unquote, each other. It's always the same, whether you take it to the individual level or to the group level, the core process is the same. It's manipulation. That's why I call realization ultimate authenticity, because I can be authentic with you only when I'm concerned about you and me equally. I have to be concerned about you as much as I am me, so I don't have a bias. So it's not that I need to be right. It's okay that you're right, and that makes me feel good, but I just need to be righter. That's the problem here. So there's a process and a system of eliminating that bias. Yes, it brings all kinds of other benefits. It brings me clarity. It brings me happiness and joy. We call realization the bliss space. It's stream entry. But I'm talking practically now. If I'm in a relationship with somebody and I'm manipulating them, which is most relationships, so that I can get what I want by using their unconscious attachments to self, which we don't recognize. It's no one's fault. We just don't see that this is happening. Then I'm truly in a relationship that's all about me. It's selfish, and I can paint it however I want to paint it. But at the end of the day, the facts are the facts. So the moment that I say to somebody, oh, you know, I kind of thought you wanted to go Saturday to the movie that I wanted to see because you love me, right? So these kinds of things we do in relationships, the kinds of things we do in friendship, the kinds of marriages we have, the kinds of family relationships we have, the business relationships we have, again, and so on and so forth, all the way out to the government community level, is always based in a first cover me and then we'll look for you. You know, so first handle my issues. I want to make sure that my pleasure pain is in balance here, and then I'll worry about you. That's never going to work out right because that's always a manipulation. That's not even really called love. That's called just me sort of pushing and prodding you until you give me what I want. And then, of course, I love you because you've done what I've wanted you to do. And these relationships are harmful. They're harmful on every level. And so we need to move away from that. That's not authentic. That's just simply saying that if you do something I don't like, I'm in fear of that. And because I'm in fear of that, I need to manipulate you so it doesn't happen. This is an insane way to have a friendship, a loving relationship with somebody, a partnership, to have a governmental relationship with this community. On any level, this is a sick and twisted way to form a relationship at all. So we first have to understand, okay, what are the things that are driving me into doing this strange kind of manipulative behavior so that, you know, I have to make my fears covered at the expense of other people? That's a process. To walk that back and to see those attachments clearly is necessary. That's a process. That's part of that evolutionary path, is to be able to start there and start looking at the way that I'm functioning. Me, not anybody else but me. How am I biased? And once I start to notice my mental, energetic, my emotional, my physiological, speech and action, and macrocosmic outside world and bias in the environment, I can begin to say, ooh, there. And I can say, wow, I'm biased toward everything. Obviously, that's where we start. There's nothing wrong with that. But if we choose to become conscious of that, then we're bettering ourselves. We're taking the purpose of life and putting it into action. We're saying that I don't accept me being an egoic animal. I want to be better than that. So because of that, I want to begin to understand, where am I unconscious? Where am I acting and using other people? And that's where we start to see, my God, I'm in everything. Like, I can't get out of anything. I need to figure this out. And as we move forward, of course, the path opens up in great ways, beautiful ways. And eventually, as we go forward, the compassion we have for others bleeds into us, and we feel and connect with others in a way that we should be feeling, connecting into ourselves. That brings clarity. Clarity and compassion married together brings ultimate liberation. And so this is the most important concept, period, on the path, regardless of tradition, culture, application, approach, practice, whatever. This is the most important kind of backbone to the spiritual path, is to understand, let go of my damn unconscious attachments and entanglements first. Let's see those first and get rid of them and make some space so that I can get back to ordinary awareness and see it from its pure, radiantly clear perspective. From there, I can then go forward back into the things of the vehicle and act in a way that's purely altruistic and for the benefit of me and the other equally. And that's the whole point. If that doesn't happen, because we're at a precipice right now, if that doesn't happen, things are going to get really bad really fast, because the exponential law says that we're moving doubles. So it's faster and faster as we go down this painful landslide of waking up, either by conscious intention or by Mother Nature. And we don't want Mother Nature waking us up, that's for sure.
No, absolutely. She is asking us to take the reins and help create together something much more beautiful and better than we've done unconsciously. We're all in this together. We're all trying to walk back into our ultimate authenticity, whether we realize it or not, just to become more awake and aware, fully alive, fully conscious human beings, and to discover who we truly are. And so if you guys are also searching for your own ultimate authenticity and greater freedom, if you want to know more about the topics in this show, about the personality, questions about whether it's a thing, one thing, what is it made of, how does it influence us, if it's not us, who is it controlling, how to make space between us and the personality in order to walk back and gain our ultimate authenticity and freedom of perspective. We are on fire right now at drewkama.com, uncovering our ultimate authenticity and becoming more aware of ourselves and everything that's going on. If that sounds empowering and like something that really drives you, come join us for open registration. Daishi, do you have any news about the website for us?
We just added a great new interview section called In the Cauldron, and it's an intense one-on-one where I interview practitioners about their experience with energy, talk about universal energy, and talk about the path and the process and the depths of how once we make a detachment from these illusory personal identities, we can become very clear and clean and happy and connected and compassionate. So those interviews are really interesting. Those are up online. Now the curriculum and the curriculum map is online. So not only can you see the step-by-step process we have, but you can also see the entire process in the map and follow it along. And we have a host of beautiful, wonderful teachers in the school that can help you along the way. That's one big family, and everybody's gone through or is going through the bumps and bruises of trying to figure out, where am I in all of this? So anyone who's looking for that, please join us. We're growing every day. Other than that, find it somewhere, as I always say. And in the meanwhile, I really appreciate your help with this, Kev. And I hope to talk to you again on another podcast real soon.
Likewise, Daishi. Thank you so much for joining us today. As always, it is an absolute blessing and honor to have you here with us on the show.
Thank you for being here.
If you have any questions or comments about the show, please feel free to email us at radio@drukama.com. You can also find us in all the usual places on social media. Just search for Drukama Teachings. The transcript for the show is also available on drukama.com. Thank you guys for joining us on today's show. Our podcast keeps thriving and growing due to you, and we look forward to seeing you next time.